This episode is the second installment in our two-part interview with senior graduate students Ben Vincent and Hiroshi Senaratne from the Biological and Biomedical Sciences program at Harvard Medical School. In the previous episode, they gave us some advice on how to pick a lab and a graduate research project. We learned that research projects grow, contract, and evolve, and that all come with some amount of success and failure. This can, of course, make graduate student life a bit turbulent. In today's episode, we talk to Ben and Hiroshi about how they've kept themselves happy during their graduate studies. We'll discuss how you can leverage your graduate student community to keep you going when things get tough. We'll learn the truth behind what makes the dreaded third year of graduate school so difficult, and we'll hear what Ben and Hiroshi are planning to do after they've gotten their diplomas.
So I guess we'll go into kind of your graduate student life in general, kind of what's kept you happy or maybe not happy while you're a graduate student. So I'm just going to ask that question, actually. What has kept you happy as a graduate student?
For me, Ben will probably agree with me on this, but it's definitely been the graduate student community. I already said, you know, postdocs don't have a DAC or a support system outside the lab scientifically often. And the same is true of, like, their socially, you know, their social life. Because grad students, we come in and we have an automatic group of potential friends and collaborators and people who understand what you're going through. And I think that's what's definitely what's kept me happy over the past 6 years.
And do you think that's specific to your program, or do you think that's usually
true? I think community is something you build. I think you get as much out of it as you are willing to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were definitely lucky with our community, but I think anyone can make a community that works for them if they want to.
You gotta seek out the right people.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. I was actually just talking about this with my PI yesterday, and we were basically talking about what keeps people in science. And her perspective is the one thing that keeps people in science most effectively is a sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
And that can extend not just to your lab environment, where I think it's very important, belonging both intellectually and socially, but further out. So belonging to a particular graduate program, belonging to this community of scientists, your department, your institution. And I think aligning your values with the values, or making sure that your values align with all of those mm-hmm. levels, is very important to your success.
Yeah, so because it's similar to how you're finding your PI that aligns with you, you're finding the people that align with
you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I agree with Hiroshi that building community is something that you can do. I think Hiroshi herself tends to be better at it than most, which I can say, but she won't. But it's incredibly important, and it's the thing that it keeps you going when the experiments aren't working.
Sure. And so what have you guys done? Give me one specific example of something that you've done to either build your community or get involved with the community that already existed.
I think I've organized a lot of events for our class over the years, and this happened kind of naturally in the first year. You know, we were all excited to be here and meet people, but after that point, when people join labs, it gets a bit harder because we don't see each other as often, and we have a lot going on in the lab. And I think I put in a lot of effort to make sure we kept seeing each other and that we did a diverse set of activities.
Mm-hmm.
So something for everybody.
Yeah.
I think Hiroshi and I are both into the power of performance.
Yes.
As a medium to unite people. And that performance doesn't have to be of incredible quality, but does have to have incredible heart in order for it to work.
Yeah.
Our performances happen to have been of exceptional quality.
There's nothing that brings people together.
So,
like,
so what are you talking about? Like, when you say performance, what do you mean?
So Hiroshi and I, together with another friend of ours, Caitlin, organized the second year skit, which in our program is always a half hour musical that we set to The Lion King. So we did basically The Lion King plot, only for a graduate student going through their first year of life.
Yeah.
And I believe the whole thing is on YouTube somewhere.
It's
right?
Not actually, but we're trying to put it there.
That, yeah.
We'll figure it out. But that, I mean, the amount of time that performance took in terms of choreography, she did all the choreography, rehearsals, singing, it was a ton of time, but, like, really cemented our group together.
And I don't think this is unique to our program. I think a lot of graduate programs have skits or some kind of funny
more
team building activities. And you know, scientists are very creative, like grad students. You just have to go on YouTube and look up videos that people have done, like science parodies and things. And those kind of experiences are really fun and help you relax and bond, so definitely recommend them.
But you also have to convince people that the time that they're giving up to do something like this is worth it. Mm-hmm. And it's basically worth it because of the community that you build. So because we did this together, you feel immediately more comfortable going to your friends and talking to them about anything. So why your experiments aren't working, you know, any sort of social aspect that impacts grad school. It just makes everything work better.
Yeah, and it's a nice support group to have for you. Going into why you might want to have a support group, I guess what has made you unhappy during your time in grad school?
Well, I think, are we going to talk about third year soon?
We will.
Yeah, I think for me the hardest thing was feeling like I didn't have a purpose at times. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be, you have to be very self-motivated in grad school. Sometimes you can feel like you're drifting. Mm-hmm. And so there were definitely times in lab where I wasn't sure if I was going in the right direction, if I was on the right track. And so doing things outside the lab helped me feel like I had a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that's a very personal answer, though, for me. Like, that's how I reacted. So I don't know what Ben feels.
I've been at a pretty solid level of contentment for a long time. So there are a couple things that have made me unhappy. I think that I'm in a really excellent and supportive environment, but not everyone is. And so when people like really go into their own experiences, and I've had a couple people come into our lab and talk about changing labs for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to take in because, you know, you want to do everything that you can to help, but you also, you know, recognize that the system sometimes doesn't work for the people that it's supposed to train. So that's really difficult. And the second thing that made me unhappy is a bunch of my friends just graduated.
Everybody leaving.
Which makes me happy for them, of course. That was hard emotionally. Because, we all start together in grad school, but you leave at different times. And so every time you leave, you feel like, you know, you're really losing some really deep, important part of the community.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, a fact of life that you have to deal with by making new connections.
For instance, Niroshi leaving soon.
Well, Tyler was the first to leave. One of our first close friends to defend.
Yeah.
And while we're on that topic, I definitely recommend the YouTube video of Tyler's defense celebration.
Oh, I also recommend that.
I could throw that into the text of the
Can you put that on the blog?
Oh, sure.
I'm really proud of that.
I will collab. So in terms of general grad students on the happiness, usually when we're at, we used to have a retreat, we still have a retreat that comes every September, right? September.
Yeah.
And there's always a senior grad student who gives a talk at the retreat, and they talk about their level of happiness versus time. And so in third year, almost inevitably, there's a huge dip in the level of happiness. And Niroshi, this kind of goes into what you're talking about, but I guess what causes that? And do you think it's a real thing? And how could students kind of avoid that?
Well, I don't know as a phenomenon what causes it, but I can tell you what caused it for me. Which was that, so first year, you know, we still had classes. Second year, we were teaching and we had qualifying exams and there was still something to work towards. And it was still like all other educational experiences I'd been a part of. There were concrete aims, things I had to work towards. And then third year, I definitely felt more aimless. Like I wasn't sure. I just had a vague feeling of that I have to get things done now. Like, I have to get serious and settle down in the lab.
Yeah.
And it's also experimentally a time when you're troubleshooting a lot of things. So I think a lot of people feel that way also.
No, that's exactly what it is. It's the first time that you don't have, like, a very defined hurdle to get over. You just have a vague sense that you have to get something done in grad school in order to graduate, but no one's really told you what that is. And you're at a point where you're first given enough time to actually devote all of your time to experiments, but you have to get good at them in order to really, you know, accomplish anything substantial. Mm-hmm. And it's a time where you don't have a lot of really concrete feedback because you haven't, you know, done the troubleshooting to get you to a place where that's actually something that you can
improve. Sure, there's so often not even something you get feedback on.
So you're basically just facing the abyss, right?
Yeah.
But the way to deal with it is, A, accepting that it's kind of a normal progression, right? It's very, I don't think you can totally avoid the abyss, right? Like if you're trying to solve, if you're trying to figure out something new, mm-hmm. that's just like a normal part about how that happens, right? Like talk to any writer, talk to any artist, mm-hmm. right? It's just a normal part of the process. And trusting the process and trusting the people around you that are there to support you through the process, mm-hmm. I think is the way to get you through it.
Yeah.
And by, as Nirisha said, focusing on things outside.
Yeah.
So to balance.
Yeah, so keeping a balance. And I think not being afraid to have your first committee meeting. I think a lot of people are like, oh, I need to have some preliminary data to show, and that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Get that first meeting
as early as possible.
As early as you can.
Mm-hmm. Because they'll help you figure out why you're grinding your gears so much, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so the last question I have for you that's kind of more on like a graduate student life. Do you guys feel that you've changed throughout this entire experience? So going through third year, going through all of that, in what ways have you changed? And are you glad that you changed in that way, I guess?
I've definitely changed. I think I've become a lot better at giving feedback in a way that is critical but not unnecessarily hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's easier to fall in the trap of assuming that someone who's like kind of a little bit cutting in their feedback is automatically smarter in some way. Like I think that's some interesting cultural thing that science has. And it's A, wrong, and B, shoves people out of science that shouldn't mm-hmm. be shoved out, mm-hmm. right? And that's something that you don't necessarily know until someone points it out to you. And my advisor specifically like devotes a lot of her time to training people in how to give good, precise, critical feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And
could you give an example of something that you've done to train yourself to give good feedback?
I think the most important thing is being specific. So a lot of people fall back on the feedback sandwich, you know, the like say something good and then say something critical and then say something good again. I think that's a fine starting point and people like having, you know, methods or a process to, mm-hmm. you know, seem like a better person.
But it can be a little transparent.
It can be completely transparent.
Yeah.
And so I think the way to deal with that or the more important thing is just being very specific about what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, someone gives you a presentation and you have a vague feeling that you were bored. And so you raise your hand and say like, I was bored during that presentation. That is not effective feedback, right? You have to be self-reflective enough. Yeah, you have to be self-reflective enough to know what makes a good presentation, how this person like came up a little bit short and how specifically to fix that. And if you can't answer all of those questions, then don't give any feedback,
mm-hmm.
right? It takes a lot of time to give good and precise feedback, mm-hmm. I think.
And Niroshi, have you feel you've changed?
I think I've become a more confident person in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when I started grad school, I would never ask questions during talks. I was always shy about it. But I think it's just going through the process, I've realized usually if you have a question, someone else in the room is asking it too, and you shouldn't feel bad about asking.
Mm-hmm.
And also I've come to understand like people giving criticism a lot better. I think it's just, as Ben pointed out, there's some weird, sometimes there's cultural, there's a weird, a feeling that the more critical someone is, the more valuable that
mm-hmm.
feedback is. And I think I've just come to understand that even people who seem to be too critical of you, they're just people too, you know?
Yeah.
They haven't necessarily learned how to express that in the best way yet.
Right.
And sometimes they're just awkward people, you know, and I think understanding that and having empathy with that and not just assuming they're criticizing me and it's personal has helped me a lot.
And I think that's generally helpful in life, too, right?
You just have
to realize that people have other things going on in their heads
you are not their priority, usually.
Yeah.
And actually, in a larger sense, like the whole process of graduate school, I think, really forces you to define what you want out of your career and what you want out of your life, what motivates you in a very fundamental way. And I don't think other educational experiences do that to the same extent, right? Because they're also mostly concerned with a training program.
Sure, right? And you have those specific aims that you're going for and other things that you don't necessarily have in grad school.
Yet. Right.
Yeah, but something about that process of, like, you know, birthing knowledge into the world really makes you look at yourself in the mirror and, like, figure out what you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, prioritizing.
So
I've become better at prioritizing over the course of grad school.
Yeah. So now that you guys are just about done birthing knowledge, as Ben said, into the world, what are you thinking about for your post-grad plans? Niroshi, this is more pertinent to you, I suppose.
Yeah, so I'm actually moving soon to LA. I'll be working at UCLA doing a fellowship in clinical cytogenetics. And what that means is I'm using a lot of the same technologies I've used in my research over the past years to study chromosome organization. But applying it to clinical samples.
Cool. And yeah. Ben?
So I got into this game to teach and do research, and that hasn't changed. So I've had excellent mentors that showed me that that is a viable path and have made the next steps very concrete in terms of basically what you would look for in a postdoc, which is the next step in terms of that path.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm starting to look around for postdocs now. And even though I'm going to graduate probably in about a year, this is, if you're on that path, like, this is the time to do it, because you want to line something up
right when you're
leaving, and the postdoc clock starts basically when you graduate, so it's important to do it early.
Yeah, on that note, I also applied for what I'm starting about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's never too early to start thinking about your post-grad plans and talking about them.
Well, it kind of along those lines too, I guess, how did you guys hear about your different opportunities after grad school, and when did you start thinking about it yourselves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I definitely did not know this was an option when I started grad school. But we, both Ben and I, are part of the program in genetics and genomics at Harvard. Harvard actually also has a clinical genetics training program. And there's some crosstalk between those two programs. And that's actually how I got to know about the field, through PGG and the other faculty mentors that I met. And I actually got to go, I met some people who do this kind of work at the Brigham, and I shadowed them for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I decided that's what I wanted to do.
So it was like a networking thing that basically got you there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And postdoc, you know, is kind of the default assumption in academia, or at least in grad school. I think that is starting to change and should change. But what they don't tell you, they kind of tell you that, oh yeah, in order to have an academic career, you need to do a postdoc, but no one really tells you, like, what that really means and how a postdoctoral project is different from a graduate student project.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are things that, you know, I now know relatively explicitly.
How did you figure that out?
I talked to my advisor about it,
mm-hmm.
right? And basically you want to kind of veer off into a slightly different direction and pick a project that you could take some aspect of it with you if and when you decide to apply for a job,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to just, like, hitching your post to someone who you think is a good scientist and doing whatever project they think is the coolest,
mm-hmm.
right? So with that information, it makes it a lot easier to know what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
So I've spent most of my time in the nuts and bolts of transcription and gene regulation, but broadening that out to kind of a more evolutionary perspective and figuring out how organisms evolve new traits,
mm-hmm.
is where I think I'm headed.
Cool.
And basically choosing advisors that I know would support, that would be excellent mentors for postdocs also,
mm-hmm.
Is critical, because,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But the key thing is making the project your own while having a good mentor.
Yeah, and, you know, making sure that you have those conversations, because it's not easy to have that type of conversation, like figuring out what work can stay, what work can go, and what you need to do in order to get you to the next step,
mm-hmm.
while also taking into account your advisor's needs,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's a complicated problem, and
mm-hmm.
the only way to deal with it is, you know, free, open, and honest communication,
mm-hmm.
and so you just need to find someone where you feel like you can have that type of conversation and feel well supported,
mm-hmm.
both in grad school and as a postdoc.
Cool. And so you just said that you guys kind of thought that people should be thinking about post-grad plans before starting, or not even before starting, but well, very early on in grad school.
Yeah.
So in terms of improving the system, is that something you both would say needs improvement or in your programs and programs in general?
I think our program is definitely getting better. Mm-hmm. It's a lot better for the students starting now than it was even for us. And that's kind of amazing that in 5 years it can change so much. Mm-hmm. But for instance, like if you go to a career panel about anything that's not a postdoc, it's still called an alternative career panel. Mm-hmm. But that's what the majority of, well, maybe not the majority, but a significant proportion of the class is looking into.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to get out of the mindset that that's an alternative path or any less valuable.
Absolutely. And I think another kind of systematic thing that can change is rewarding good mentors in some formal way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the ideal would be taking into account mentorship in terms of tenure decisions and in terms of promotion mm-hmm. in academia. But also, you know, in terms of salary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So really incentivizing the mentors that are going to get students to where they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like incentivizing people to join those labs and those people. Because it's really, it's not taken into consideration as much as anyone would think, if at all. Mostly
for you're saying for like tenure
I'm
decisions,
saying for tenure decisions and promotion in academia.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically your research transcript and what other people think of you in the field,
mm-hmm.
but not so much your training record. And I think that's something that should change because we're in a training program, right?
Sure, yeah.
Both postdocs and grad students are fundamentally trainees,
mm-hmm.
and the institutions need to make sure that that training is really happening. And that it's not just, you know, incidental to fueling the scientific workforce.
Mm-hmm. And you think that could have, like, knock-on benefits later? It will make, how will that, I guess, impact the research environment in general? I guess the counter-argument to it might be, like, what you really want, like, money going towards is something that's going to improve the research field itself, not necessarily improve the trainees.
Well, how do you improve research? And not by improving the scientists that are doing the research.
Yeah.
Right?
So like, it's kind of... it's
if you're making people better scientists, you're going to improve science.
Sure. So it's the long view as opposed to kind of the short-sighted view that you need to funnel money straight into the actual research project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throwing money at a problem does not get that problem solved.
Yeah.
If the people are not trained well.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. I guess my final question for you guys then is, I like how I framed it in my writing, so I'm going to read it right off this paper. What is your favorite bit of advice to give younger graduate students, and do they actually seem to take it?
Well, I can go first. My favorite advice to give people is not to rush into making a decision about what lab to join, because I think when you come into grad school, everyone has different experiences in their rotations. Some people start joining early, and then it's easy to feel pressure, like, oh, I need to get into a lab. I'm going to fall behind my classmates if I don't join immediately. And I think the biggest mistake someone can make is joining before they feel 100% ready because they're worried about falling behind or passing their qualifying exam. And when I tell people that they should slow down and not wait, I don't think people take that advice because I think people are really worried about falling behind at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But really just taking that extra time at the beginning is going to be, it will help you so much later.
Sure, yeah. It's another one of taking the long view of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I think that's great advice. The clock is a real thing and it controls how we feel about ourselves more than we would like to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally agree that, you know, a couple months of, you know, soul searching will save you a year or possibly 3 years in a bad environment where you're not going to make any real progress in terms of your goals. So I think that's a good one. My advice is to pick a mentor. Pick a mentor and not a problem, not like a scientific problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing that's going to get you through grad school and the thing that follows you from grad school on is your mentor, not just in terms of how they advance your own career in grad school, but their letter, right? Their letter of reference is hugely important in your career, no matter what that career is. Like, everyone's gonna want to see it because you spent 6 years with this person, and they know you
pretty well.
and so, really thinking about that initially based on like what you know about this person as a person, is this the type of person you want writing you a letter for the rest of your natural life?
Yeah, and like you know, the other people in lab will change. It's the PI who's there for the long, for the whole time.
Yeah. And do people seem to take that advice when you've given it?
I think they're taking it more and more as I've become better at giving it. Because it's easy to say, like, pick a mentor without defining what constitutes good mentorship.
Right.
And I've had a lot of... I've had a lot of trouble with that in talking to students, but I think I'm getting better.
Yeah.
And there are resources out there
that
can kind of define what we mean by good mentors. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll one day like put our own spin on it in the literature and you guys can take a look.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys very much for sitting down and talking to us.
Thank you for having us, Tyler.
Yeah. I'm sure this will be very helpful to people as they're thinking about joining labs and starting grad school. So thanks again.
Like Ben and Niroshi, we at Agene are strong proponents of the scientific community. We hope that you found these two episodes useful if you're just starting or if you're continuing your grad school experience. As with any great endeavor, graduate school will have its ups and downs, but if you take some of Ben and Niroshi's advice to heart, we think you'll come out on top. And always remember, graduate school isn't the end of your career. You should spend time from the very start of graduate school thinking about how you'd like to use the skills you developed during your PhD later in life. Check out the Career and Management for Scientists resources on the Agene blog to learn a bit more about some of the opportunities that you'll have as a PhD. Sound off in the comment section of the blog with any questions you have about graduate student life, and we'll help in any way we can. Thank you for listening to the Agene podcast, a better way to share science.